Welcome to the Life Leadership Podcast with myself, Leela Singh, all things coaching, career, and personal branding. This podcast is for ambitious career professionals like you, wanting to create a life of choice and freedom, to be, do, and have more through overcoming limitations, to develop new perspectives and insights, and to redefine your success, be that in work, health, relationships, and so much more.
In this episode, I'm speaking with Nida East. Throughout her career, Nida has always taken on new challenges, from leading a cloud migration team for a tier one bank to leading operations for a large scale global development factory across two countries, five sites, and 400 plus people. Passionate about people, Nida is known for building and leading high-energy, high-performing teams and creating an inclusive, conscious culture with a strong sense of belonging at the heart of everything she does. Nida returned to IBM from maternity leave in April 2021 and undertook a challenging role in an extremely fast-paced environment as Chief of Staff / Exec Assistant to the IBM Consulting UK and Ireland Managing Partner. Through sharing her own experiences, Nida aims to show others that being a parent doesn't mean you have to take a step back in your career. In this episode, Nida shares with us why becoming a parent does not equate to compromising on your career ambitions. As a return to work mum, three essential points that will make your return a success. Normalizing working dads and changing the narrative. Why choosing to lean in prevented Nida from holding herself back and the exponential result of this. And the impact of effective communication for work, for relationships, and for mental health. So let's head over and hear what Nida has to say. Nida, hi there, and welcome to the Life Leadership Podcast. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here with me today. How are you doing?
Really good, thanks. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I know we've been talking about this for, I think, over a year now, so it's great that we've finally got to get it in the calendar and have this conversation. So I'd love to start with you as a proud IBMer. So tell me a little bit more about that. What makes you proud to work with IBM?
So IBM has a long-standing history going back over 100 years now for putting their people first, right? So we always, you know, we like to focus on doing the right thing for our people. So that makes it a fantastic organization to work for. I mean, back when I started at IBM over 12 years ago now, which, wow, that's gone really quick. One of the first things I remember hearing is that we were encouraged to bring our whole selves to work. And you can see that all across the organization. So it really is a fantastic place to work.
What do you mean by that?
Bringing all the different parts of your personality to work. And, you know, I'd say the last, you know, 5 years or so, I think we've seen this across a number of organizations as well, in terms of even how you like to dress as well.
Right.
The different parts of your personality too, whether you are a working mum, whether, you know, you're part of the LGBTQ community, if you're, you know, the different types of communities as well, the different parts of your personality, it's all about bringing your whole self into the workplace as well, which I think is, you know, a great place to work, because then you also get to work with so many different people and you get diversity of thought as well, which makes a really big difference when you're looking at different solutions and working with different clients and things like that. So
how have you found yourself settling into that and interacting in terms of the inclusivity? How has that worked for you?
Oh, fantastic. I mean, I've been able to contribute to a number of the different kind of business resource groups that we have. More recently, I've actually taken part in our mental health community. So while I was on maternity leave, it's an area that I'm really passionate about. I've talked previously about working through anxiety and working through postnatal anxiety. And when I was off on maternity leave this time around, I actually went and studied for a qualification in mental health so that I could better support people. So that was looking at advocacy in the workplace for mental health and also mental health first aid, which is an area that I'm really passionate about. And so I'm really happy to be able to give back as well in that sense.
Oh, that's amazing. That's lovely. And do you find, I know you said about bringing your whole self to work, do you find that people at all levels within the organisation share some level of vulnerability at some point in time? Is that Are people quite open in that way?
I think that's really, really important to share that vulnerability as well, right? Because then it makes you more human. And if you're more human, you're much more approachable as well. And I've noticed that in our leaders. I've been super lucky to have some fantastic leaders and mentors in my time. And that's really helped me build and develop my own leadership style as well. And I think vulnerability, showing that, is definitely a part of my leadership style, along with being empathetic and, I'd like to think, authentic and positive as well.
Oh, that definitely comes across. I mean, I think that's one of the things that stood out for me when I, you know, connected with you on LinkedIn and just saw some of the posts and that underlying energy, the passion for, like, the person that you are and who you are in the workplace as a working mother as well, particularly when you had your first child. So I think all of that's really important. And it, like you said, it makes you real.
Yeah.
More approachable, more easier to connect with, to work with, to talk with.
Yeah, and I think it also helps you build an environment where your team feels psychologically safe as well. I think that's really important in leadership, because if your team don't feel that psychological safety, when there is a problem, they're going to spend so much time worrying about how are we going to actually deliver this message, how are they going to take it, and when they're losing that valuable time and energy in actually fixing that problem. And also, you won't know about it. So where you can actually help your team fixing that problem, you're now not even involved in it. So I think, you know, having a team, making sure that psychological safety is in place is incredibly important for me.
Yeah, no, I get that. I totally get that. And then just moving on a little bit to, obviously, you've been away on maternity leave, you've just returned. You also were awarded or recognised for Returner of the Year. So tell me a little bit more about that.
Oh, that was awesome. I mean, getting that nomination to make the shortlist was just, it's one of my favourite moments in my career. I really wasn't expecting it. I worked really hard on that submission. I remember actually holding my baby boy in the little carrier and trying to get the submission in, because there was a part of me that's like, okay, maybe this isn't the right time to do the submission. But I thought, no, we are still going to go for it. He's asleep, so let's get it submitted. But it meant so much to me, because for someone that worked for 12 years, I spent a long time building my confidence and working on it. So to be recognized for my contributions in the workplace was, you know, a huge deal for me. And I'll be honest, I cried when I got that. Got that shortlisting through. It meant so much.
Tell me, what would you say to other parents who are looking to return to work?
So probably three things. The first being, having kids does not mean that you have to change your ambitions. That is the very first thing I have to say on that. And yes, you are a different person. Having kids completely, well, for me, it changed my world and changed my perspective, right? But that doesn't mean it has to change your ambition. And if anything, you know, you've still got the skills that you had before parental leave, but if anything, you've got even more skills now. I say this to a lot of people as a little bit of a side note. If you're looking to hire a project manager, hire somebody returning from parental leave for sure, because we've had to manage awake windows and then, you know, milk versus food with your naps. And if you get any of that wrong, they're not sleeping and then you're not sleeping. So it's you have to learn and adapt really, really quickly and manage all sorts of different schedules with a tricky client. So yeah, sorry, going back to my point though, the first thing I'd have to say is, you know, having kids does not change your ambition. Second is network, network, network. This was invaluable to me. And there were times when I was on maternity leave where my son wasn't sleeping, and one of the things that helped me with that was actually just being able to network. I just went on LinkedIn and chatted to people, and I was talking about mental health with people as well. But also, networking can really help you in finding new mentors and opportunities as well. And you can use your keep in touch days to do that as well. I used that time to network with my mentors whilst I was on maternity leave. So network, network, network. And the third thing is, before you come back to work, is spend some time building your routine. So build out your routine with, you know, how are you going to manage childcare with your role, and what does that actually look like in practice? So one of the things that James and I do, James, my husband, one of the things that we do is every week we sit down with a calendar and we work out, you know, who's going to do pick up and drop off, who's working in the office, who's working from home, what have we got on that week? And a new important thing for us is who's going to do some exercise on what day. So, you know, if I'm going for a run, that means James is going to do bath time. So that's something that's really, really important to us as well. So those are the three things. Number one, ambition. Number two, network, network, network. And number three is build out your routine.
Nice. I think they're all very valuable recommendations there, and obviously coming from experience. So
oh yeah, lots of lessons learned went into this.
I love that. All coming from a really positive place as well. That's what I love about this. It's not like, oh my God, how am I going to make this work? It's like, no, this can work. Let's find a way to make that happen.
I think that's really important as well, because I know that when I was a graduate, I remember thinking for a number of years, how are you supposed to do this? How are you supposed to have kids and, you know, keep driving your career forward? And there was a period of time where I started to think, oh, I'm going to have to take a step back. And that's not true. And I just want anybody listening to this to know that that is not true. And like I said earlier, having kids does not mean that your ambitions have to change. So, yeah.
Yeah, point well made there. And I think so a question I've got on that is that statement subject to the level of support of an employer? Or do you think that's possible irrespective?
So I think a huge chunk of it is definitely down to the employer as well, because I would have struggled, really would have struggled, if I hadn't had the support of my employer. They understood my boundaries, right? So I've got to go at 5:30, I've got to go and pick up my kids, because they're 3 and 1, they can't drive home. I need to go and pick them up. So I think employers, where they can support you in flexible working, right? That's so helpful, because it means that I can be a mother and I can still drive my career forward as well. And it's, you know, I found that one of the really helpful things as well is everybody in my team understood that. And it's not just about working parents as well. There are people that will have other commitments that they need to do outside of work. So it's understanding that range of commitments within your team. And one of the things that I implemented in one of my teams was core working hours, right? As in, okay, we're going to have meetings between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. That's when we're going to have all of our team meetings. So that then allowed for the other commitments that members of the team had, right? So that's just one of the examples of the ways that, you know, we can support people.
Which is great you're sharing this, because it might give people who are listening ideas of what they can either implement for their team or recommend or suggest to their managers.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay.
Yeah, but, I mean,
yeah, go on.
No, you go, Lila, sorry.
No, I was going to say, I think just highlighting that is giving people food for thought as to what they can either implement as a team leader or manager, or also recommend if something isn't working at the moment, to recommend up to their manager to say, look, how about we try something? As opposed to coming with a problem that this isn't working for me, it's actually, here's something I think could work better for everyone in the team as a solution.
Yeah, because then you're also including everybody as well. Having those meetings for us 10 to 4 meant that everybody could make those meetings, because also people on our team are working different patterns as well. So some are working like 8 till 3, for example, of, and you've got, you know, childcare pick up and drop off as well, and, you know, schools finish at 3:30. So you've got to work out all those different schedules. That doesn't mean that we're only working 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. It just means those are the hours when everybody's available for a meeting. And then we can all work flexibly outside of those times as well.
And I think that, you know, just in my experience where I had a similar setup in terms of the flexibility means there's a more element of trust and wanting to get the work done because, you know, you're trusted to get it done rather than micromanaging, feeling that there isn't the trust and then thinking, oh, what's the point? Why should I go back this evening and finish something because they don't trust me or they're not going to believe me or they think I should have sat there till 6 o'clock in the office when I needed to get away to do something.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I think micromanagement is one way to massively demoralize your team. And I honestly believe nobody is going to turn up to work with the intention of doing a bad job. So I think in this day and age, we need to be, you know, I'd like to think we're all really great at trusting members in our team to enable them to work flexibly.
Exactly. And I completely agree. So tell me, I know when we spoke before, you talked about normalizing working dad role. So it's not just about a working mum. So share a little bit about that and changing that narrative.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think one of the ways that we can do that is encourage more men to talk about their role as a dad as well, as a parent as well. And also one of the things you can do is that for members in leadership, so I have been very fortunate that when I came back to work, people asked me, okay, you know, what's your plan in terms of you're going to come back to work 5 days a week? What are your boundaries? When do you need to go and pick up your kids? I think we need to be doing the same for anybody, regardless of your gender. If you're returning from parental leave or if you've just had kids, we need to be having that conversation with everyone, not just mums that are returning to work. And I think that will make a huge difference in normalizing that as well, that, you know, men can be parents as well. It's not just women as well. And men make a huge difference. I mean, I'm super lucky. My partner, James, is 100% on the parenthood journey with me. So I think we need to recognise more men for the contributions that they make as well as parents.
Yeah, and I'm listening to that who's someone who's not a parent. However, just thinking about that, I've written down here as a note, open communication about it. So I think that's number one, very important. But also for men to be comfortable speaking about it, as you said, speaking about their role and their responsibilities. And if it's, you know, they're picking up the kids and they're therefore they need to leave early, okay, make it known. So then it becomes, as you said, normal.
Yeah, 100%. I think it works both ways. The dads need to be more comfortable in voicing that, but they need to be met with the support that that's okay. And I think that comes top down, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That level of support and talking about it in leadership meetings more openly will really help everybody, I think, get the support that they need.
Yeah, and I think that comes back to what you started about bringing your whole self to work. It is about that is part of you. It's your family, it's your other responsibilities, so I think that's important. So tell me a little bit about, I know you've touched on it already briefly, but tell me about team parents.
that's the key word there, right? Is that we're a team, we're in this 100% together. I think I've seen something mentioned previously where people talk about it being 50-50, like it's an equal split. For us, it's like, no, we're in this together. I mean, you know, it's 100%, that's the goal. But sometimes, you know, if one of us is working on a promotion case, then that person might, the other parent might need to then be doing bath time and things like that. So it's important to be able to flex that. But the most important thing is that you know that you've got each other's support, right? And that's how you help each other out. But like I was saying earlier, having a plan for each week, understanding what's going on in each other's worlds career-wise is really helpful. And the other thing to that is understanding each other's goals as well. That makes a huge difference because then you know how you can help each other out with those goals. And, you know, what's going on this week that's going to help that? Or how are they feeling? Because being a parent isn't easy. I know that people told me this before I became a parent. But it is really tough when you're trying to juggle everything. So if you've got a supportive partner and you're in it together, it makes such a difference. And I feel very, very lucky to have that.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic, fantastic example there. And I know you touched upon when we spoke previously about when you were on maternity leave, and feeling that you were living almost two separate lives at that point. So what, why was that?
That's a really important point, actually, because so for us, we met on the graduate scheme 12 years ago, we've always, you know, been through the same kind of career journey. We're both very career focused, both very driven. So when we had kids, all of a sudden we're leading very, very different lives. So, you know, James is now a dad and his schedule has changed. He can come home and he can do bath time and things like that. But for me, I'm going through the kind of sleep deprivation and also the hormonal changes as well that come along with having children, especially in the earlier stages. So all of a sudden, as hard as we might try, we are leading completely different lives. And it's then understanding how each other are feeling. So it can make it really tough, I think, on any relationship when all of a sudden you're in different situations completely. But the important thing there is communication is really important. I know that sounds obvious, but when you're in it, it's not that obvious. You get to a point where you almost expect the other person to know how you're feeling and what you're thinking and what kind of day you've had, when that's not the case. We're not all psychics, right? So it is important to kind of remember to communicate with each other. And the most important thing to remember is that you're both in it together and you can tackle it together as a team. I think I mentioned to you before, James, when our son just didn't sleep for 5 months, there were a couple of times James came home and just turned the monitoring app off on my phone and just went and slept in our baby boy's room so that I could actually get some sleep. And then he had to get up and go to work the next day as well, which was really tough for him. But it was just like one of those things that just shows me the kind of support that I've got.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, you're touching a number of things here, because this is about not just about work and career. This is about, as you say, communication. Yes, it's obvious, but it's not always obvious either. It's almost like a lot of times assumed. Well, you should know how I'm feeling. You should know what I'm going through. You know, no, nobody should. It's actually, it's a really important point you've mentioned here throughout about open communication. And that's in any relationship dynamic, whether it's your partner, or, as you said, in the workplace, how, you know, the impact of that can be.
Yeah, I think looking at things from somebody else's point of view as well is, I mean, I completely, you know, having a child, when I came back to it the first time round, having my daughter completely changed my perspective on what it is to be a working parent. Like, I had no idea that, you know, before I even start my day now, on most days, I'll have gotten up in the morning, I'll have gone through the absolute battle that it is to dress a toddler and a baby, then put them in the car, get them to nursery, then get back home, and then I've gone through all of that before I even started my day. And then and look back on what I thought parenthood was, and it had never occurred to me that on a day-to-day basis, that's what your morning is. I'm not saying that, like, it's a bad thing. It's a privilege to get to have those moments with my kids and get them dressed in the morning, right? But at the same time, it is a tough thing to do every day. And then you have to get straight back into the headspace of work too. Yeah. So it's a different perspective.
And hence the skills of project management.
Yes, planning. Yeah, very handy.
And I like what you said there as well about the team parents theme of besides just, you know, not only the communication, but having those agreements in place. So sitting down each week and planning out the commitments, the priorities, so that things get to work almost effortlessly then, because you spent that time.
Yes. Again,
having the communication, but also just supporting one another.
Yeah, and then we've got that plan as well for the week. So we all know what we're doing. And if we need to flex it, we know what our options are. We know where we're starting from. We've got like a base plan.
Exactly. Yeah.
But one of the things that's different this time around is definitely the focus on exercise, because it makes such a big difference. Well, I found it makes such a big difference to my mental health. So try and make sure that we schedule that in and try and stick to it. So it's a regular feature of our weekly routines. You know, when am I going to get to attempt another run?
Absolutely, absolutely agree. So talk to me about your role as chief of staff.
Oh, wow. So you know, I was talking earlier about the importance of networking, right?
Yeah.
So when I was on my first maternity leave and I was really nervous about coming back to work, and I would say to James, what am I going to do next? Everybody's kind of, you know, cracked on with their skills. It's been a whole year. What does the world look like? There's been a pandemic. Everything is different now. And it was actually James who said to me, you know what? First of all, you need to go read this book and I'll show it to you. So he bought me this book, which is Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. Brilliant book. Highly recommend it. And off the back of that, I was like, okay, let's start networking again. So I booked in calls with my mentors. I got more comfortable again. I started thinking about what are my career goals. Now, off the back of those conversations with my mentors, one of them said, hey, there's a new managing partner. He's looking for a chief of staff, senior EA. Why don't you interview for the position? And I was like, no way. There's no way I can do that. I've just had a kid. I'm just adapting, you know, working at my career and things like that. How am I going to manage it all? But actually, again, talking to my mentors, talking to James, talking to my support network. Funnily enough, my mother-in-law, who was saying to me, what do you mean you can't do it? Of course you can do it. Why can't you do it? See, I had to really change my mindset and also tell myself off, right? You know, think about the stories you're telling yourself, right? What do you mean you can't do it? So I went for the interview. I had a chat with the managing partner of IBM Consulting at the time, and it was so lovely, and we got on really well, and I took the role. And it's one of the best things I ever did. I learned so much about, you know, what it takes to run such a huge organization, and I got a fantastic insight into that. So that was brilliant, and I'm so glad that I did it.
Amazing. That's so, so amazing. So I just want to go back a step to something you mentioned there. The stories we tell ourselves. And I think that's important to just reiterate, because you caught yourself and you had people around you just pointing out the way that you're speaking to yourself. And this is something I touch on a lot in the work that I do, is we want to start tuning in more to how we talk to ourselves, because often we're pulling ourselves down.
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely something that I realized and had to work on back when I was a graduate as well. So stop, you know, really stop and think about the stories you're telling yourself, and why are you telling yourself that story? And also, is it something that you would say to any of your friends?
So then, or to your children?
Yeah, exactly.
I use that example. Would you speak to your 3-year-old child in the way you speak to yourself? And anyone I've ever said that to would be like, no. But yet we beat ourselves up and discourage ourselves so much.
Yeah, and I think it just takes a lot of practice to kind of spot that in yourself and to stop it.
And then to turn that around, look at the power of being able to do that, because then that creates the opportunities that you said, I can't do it. What if I can?
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing that I've learned in the way of thinking is, what am I afraid of happening here? You know, what's stopping me? And what's the best thing that could happen out of this? So it's a complete different mindset change. And that didn't happen overnight, but that's taken a decade of me working on that. And like I said earlier, it's only a couple of years ago where I find myself thinking in the old way again, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'll always say that is normal, because for so many years we've had this ingrained way of thinking and being, and then you start to learn something that new and look to sort of reframe, reprogram, whatever you want to call it, to serve ourselves better. But actually often you'll drop back into that, let's say, I can't do it mode, but because now you've developed that self-awareness, you'll catch yourself and pull yourself back out of it, as opposed to just going down that rabbit hole of beating yourself up.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and you know, the questions there, you know, what could go well? Because we naturally, our brain seems to go to the, what if it doesn't work? What if it goes wrong? What if, as opposed to, well, what if it went well? What if it was really successful? Imagine that. And those are the questions we kind of hide away from asking ourselves.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and it just creates a whole different, even energy or perspective around that opportunity. And for me, it's why I see so many people missing out on opportunities because of that. But for this exact reason, it's like the fear of what if.
Yeah, I think it takes some time to build up that mindset change, right? It's not, like I was saying, it's not an overnight thing, but it's a brilliant change.
Completely, yeah, because just a great example for you of the opportunity that created for you. And on the back of that, I'd love to know, what was your biggest learning from that experience as chief of staff?
So being intentional with my time, like 100%, that was the top bit of learning for me. Was,
and what does that mean for people who don't understand?
So it meant that being intentional with my time, having a prioritized list every single day of what I'm going to do, what requires my focus, and what doesn't require my focus right this minute. Okay, so what's high priority, medium priority, low priority? I run my life off of to-do lists now. And it's just on my, you know, I use Apple, so it's just on my iPhone in my notes. I always have a running top 10 list of things I've got to get done today, things that can wait. I mean, that just helps me. And when you're on a role like a chief of staff, senior EA, you are going to get stuff that's just thrown at you that suddenly changes the priority of the things in your to-do list or changes your schedule for the day. And it just helps you adapt and also enables you to keep focused on the important things as well. So yeah, that's the thing, I think the thing that I really learned and has definitely helped me, not just in that role, but just in managing my time in general.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just made a note of that actually, because what occurred to me as you said that is being adaptable and flexible. And I think that's evident as a parent and in your career.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. That was super, super helpful. Just learning how to be intentional every day with, you know, this is the goal for the day. This is what I want to get done. And the other thing that I didn't necessarily learn, but when I was leading the team and we used to have daily stand-ups with the office team, one of the things I tried to do was be really honest about what it takes to be a working parent. So one of the things I didn't know was that when you send your child to nursery for the first time, they pick up lots of germs and they come home a lot with different bugs. And I didn't know this. So there were a few times where, you know, Isla was, she was feeling okay, but you know, she did have a bug, so she couldn't go to nursery. So on the daily team stand-up, Isla would be on the call with me. And I say, look, this is what it's like being a working parent. Sometimes I've got my daughter at home with me and I'd make the call. We'd look at the priorities we had for that day, divvy it up between the team. And then I would look after Isla and, you know, check back in later. I'd work flexibly off the back of that. But I tried to be as honest as I could be to show the team, this is what it's like. You can do it. You can still drive your career forward and be a working parent at the same time. And this is what that can look like as well. So that was something that was really important to me to show, just to, you know, like I was saying earlier, bring my whole self to work. Completely. This is what it's like, a working parent, right?
Yeah, so, no, I love this because I think, you know, a great example of what is possible. Because a lot of people will err towards the side of, well, this isn't possible. Now I've got to put things on hold and so forth. And you're a real life example of actually that's not true.
Yeah, it's not true. You know, we don't need to hold ourselves back. Now, don't get me wrong. There are plenty of external barriers that do hold women back from the workplace. The cost of childcare at the moment is just astronomical, right? It's crazy. As an external barrier, there are external barriers. Let's not put more barriers on ourselves than we need to, right? So let's not hold ourselves back. Like that's all I'm trying to say.
And well said as well. Well said. So tell me, what does it mean for you to be listed as a finalist in the Women in IT Awards?
I was over the moon when I was shortlisted for that award. That meant the world to me, and it still does now. I'm still super proud to have made that shortlist. For someone that spent so long working on my confidence, it was just a huge deal to get that nomination. So yeah, still one of my career highlights for sure.
And it absolutely should be. And when you say you spent time working on your confidence, tell me a little bit about that.
So when I joined the grad scheme back in 2011, I don't think I'd quite realized that I had a lack in confidence at that time. I remember sitting around the room going, oh my gosh, all these, you know, everybody's so confident here, and they were talking about all their achievements, and I felt like I didn't fit in. So I spent a long time trying to find my voice, trying to put my ideas forward. It took a lot of coaching. I have some fantastic mentors to thank for that, because believe it or not, I used to be very shy and very, very, very quiet over a decade ago. So it took a lot of work. So that getting that making it to that shortlist was definitely a career highlight.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, I think well-deserved.
Thank you.
Very well-deserved. So tell me, what is the biggest challenge that you've faced to date, would you say, when it comes to your career?
The biggest challenge, I would have to say, was not getting my promotion to senior manager first time round. So I don't think we talk about failure enough. Failing that process, I learned the most out of failing that process. I mean, it didn't feel like it at the time, right? On the day of my interview, just before, I think it was about an hour before, there'd been a client incident and I was massively distracted. That became the most important thing to me, understandably, right? I'm trying to beat myself up for this. But it meant that I went into that interview panicked. I wasn't in the right mindset. And all of the anxiety that I've been working on, all that confidence stuff I was talking about before, all of that crept in. And the interview did not go as well as planned. And I didn't pass the round, right? Now I did get it, got it 3 months later. But that 3 months, I had to really focus on building back my confidence. Now I had the ability and capability. That's why I'd been sponsored into the process in the first place. But I really had to work on that anxiety and the confidence again. And I have to thank one of my mentors, a guy called Andy Keevil, who spent hours coaching me to build that confidence back up again, but also got me to think about, you know, what was it that was really holding me back? What was it that was making me feel like I wasn't good enough to go through this process? So that, you know, although it's not fun failing a process, it was awful, but it forced me to really look at what was it that was really blocking my self-confidence. So yeah, it was a rubbish time, but I learned the most out of it. And you know what? I'm really thankful now to have gone through that whole process.
So yeah, thank you for sharing that. And what I just want to say, and maybe you probably saw me smile as you were talking there, is that because in my world, I don't believe there is such a thing as failure. It's everything is learning.
Yes.
It's what we take from it. If we keep doing the same thing over and over again and then wondering why it's not working, then okay, you could deem that as failure because you're not learning from it. But if something doesn't go as planned, it's what we take from that.
Yeah.
For one. And you've just given a fantastic example there of that. Okay, what was my biggest learning? And you just explain that. But the second part of it that I want to just highlight that you said there is you took responsibility for it.
Yeah.
It's like about me. What can I do differently? What do I need to work on? Where are the gaps? Rather than what a lot of people go towards is, oh, okay, well, it's because of something outside of my control.
Yeah. So I spent a lot of time really thinking about, you know, okay, I've got the skills. I know that I can do this. Why can't I talk about it? Why am I getting so anxious when we were doing practice interview questions? It's like, start tripping myself up. And it was just really, really interesting. And it just took me a couple of months getting back in there, doing the practice interview questions. And then when we actually had the interview on the day, it was a breeze. It just felt really natural because I'd really gone in and I'd addressed the problems that were really holding me back, and practicing it and practicing it and practicing it on the day, it was actually really fun. I know that sounds cheesy, but it was really, really fun. And it felt so good getting that promotion, and it has changed my perspective so much. So,
change your perspective how?
So I think in terms of what it takes to be promotion ready and what you need to do on the day, and also being aware of what other people might be feeling when they're going for promotion, and also how important it is to hear other people's stories about where things didn't go right.
Mm-hmm.
When I didn't pass the first time round and I spoke to my mentors, I had so many mentors tell me about their stories of when things didn't go to plan, when they didn't get a promotion the first time round. And that's made it so much more, I don't know, more relatable to me. I didn't feel like such a kind of failure. I don't like using that word, but you know, I didn't feel like such a failure at the time because actually these are the people that I look up to and they've gone through it. So it's absolutely fine and it's going to be okay. So and it changed my perspective on failing. It's okay to fail because, like you said, that's where you learn the most.
Mm-hmm.
Experience is where I learned the most, for sure. So
yeah,
I'm more open about when things don't go to plan now in general, and in the hope that somebody else might learn from it as much as I do.
Exactly. And you just share by sharing that will help a lot of people. Because there are going to be people who put themselves forward, whether it, you know, it's for promotion or to, you know, a new project or something, maybe get knocked back for whatever reason and say, well, I'm not doing that again.
Yeah, no, that's how I felt, right? The first time round, I was like, I'm not doing that again. I'm just going to stick here and that's fine. And I had to really work on dusting myself off and going again and getting used to that as well. And you know, getting used to the idea that, hey, things might not go to plan. But whatever happens, we're going to be okay.
Exactly. It's almost, again, comes back to what's the worst that could possibly happen, right? Yeah. And actually, knockbacks can often, or not often, they do make us more resilient. They make us stronger. They make us more courageous to take those risks and put ourselves out there the next time around.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I was really worried about that had upset me so much at the time was worrying what people were going to think about me not passing that promotion. I felt like I had let people down and I really worried, oh God, everyone's going to be laughing at me. Nobody was laughing at me. Why would they do that? They're not horrible people. You know, people came out to help me and support me and go, right, okay, let's work on this anxiety. Let's work on this confidence. Let's get through it. So that, you know, I learned so much from that. And like I said, completely changed my perspective on what it means to fail.
Yeah. Nida, thank you so much. This has been so insightful and completely enjoyable just talking to you and hearing all that you have to share that is of so much value, honestly. One last thing is, what is next for you?
Oh, what's next for me? Funnily enough, I want to work on my next promotion. I don't know when that's going to be, but I'm working with my mentors at the moment on locking down a role that's going to help me build those gaps to go on to the next stage. So I'm really excited about that. One of the other things I've just picked up is leadership of the parents community. So really excited to co-lead that with my fellow two co-leads. I'm really, really excited to lead that community. So, yeah.
Love it. You're making a huge impact both for, you know, women who are mothers, women in the workplace, and showing the courage to you know, take action, to step up. Really
great,
really good advocate.
That's really kind of you to say. Thank you so much. And thanks for inviting me today.
Absolute pleasure, Nida. Thank you so much for taking time out to talk to me.
Cool. Thank you.
You take care.
You take care too.
Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already done so. And if you enjoyed and gained value from today's episode, then do please leave a review telling us your key learnings and what you enjoyed the most. And do please share this podcast with your friends and colleagues so we can spread the word on life leadership, creating a life of choice, freedom, and new possibilities. Connect with me directly on LinkedIn, and if you would like to learn more about how we can work together, either DM me on LinkedIn or email me. All details and resources can be found in the show notes.